Welcome to the Connected Insurance Podcast, presented by Agency Revolution. Listen to interviews with the most influential people in the insurance industry. Learn the most important strategies, tactics, trends, and challenges facing today's independent insurance agents and brokers. New episodes every Wednesday. Visit agencyrevolution.com and click media to explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers. Subscribe today and get updates delivered right to your inbox. And now, without further delay, the Connected Insurance Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Michael Janz, founder of Agency Revolution, where we automate your systems, engage your customers, and help you grow your agency. Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Connected Insurance Podcast, where it's our job to find the geniuses, innovators, movers, and shakers in the insurance industry and discern and deconstruct what they are doing to help you grow your agency faster. And I'm excited to bring you this week's guest. My friend Charles Specht is the CEO of the Permission Group, and their promise is to teach agents around the country how to turn prospects into loyal clients and to build a $1 million commission book of business, which seems like a tall order, except Charles can deliver that with credibility because he has done it himself. He's been in the insurance industry since around the year 2000, worked for a large agency on the West Coast, and then went to work for one of the alphabet houses where he built his $1 million book of business. He has since gone on and changed his life, which I'll let him describe in this podcast, and has gone on to help other agents build a sizable book of business and essentially a business that they love and satisfies their dreams. So for those of you, particularly commercial lines brokers, you are going to get tremendous practical, tactical value out of a system that is laid out very clearly that will help you become the obvious choice in your marketplace and that will get you very quickly from wherever you are right now to broker of record letters and controlling the conversation with the marketplace, delivering an ongoing stream of value and controlling the conversation with prospects. So before we get started, a few additions or a few announcements that I want to make. Number one, Agency Revolution has recently published the Digital Marketing Toolkit. I suggest that you get it. So if you visit the podcast page or the Agency Revolution blog page, there is a sidebar where you can request it and you can get it for free. In it, this guidebook covers critical do's and don'ts for your website, critical do's and don'ts for your social media efforts, and critical do's and don'ts for marketing automation and the way you communicate to your marketplace and your customers. So again, you can get that for free. A couple of other quick announcements. I'm almost done with my book on the new content marketing and how you can use that to accelerate your growth. I'd like to make it available for free for our podcast listeners. You can drop me a line. You don't even have to say anything other than I want your book. Michael at agencyrevolution.com, or you can connect with me on LinkedIn and let me know there. Also, this is the time of year where I go through my more or less annual exercise and deliver my state of the industry address for property and casualty, particularly the insurance agent and broker channel, and particularly for those who are agents or brokers or care about agents and brokers. There are, in my estimation, four critical forces or trends that must influence appropriate and effective strategy, and that's what I cover in this report. So hopefully that'll be out shortly. Stay tuned, and I'll let you know, and I'd like to make that available for you free as well. One last thing that I want to mention before we get started. A lot has happened since I sold my shares in Agency Revolution, and more or less the company just keeps getting better. So without me, if you have not seen it, you should see. They have launched a new product called Attract. It is an elegant and integrated product that combines cutting-edge website, automated marketing, and social media strategies. along with award-winning content. So it really covers a very broad spectrum of what every agency needs in order to be present and deliver ongoing value to your marketplace. You should check it out. You should at least take a look at it. So those announcements out of the way, I want to thank Charles for, he has a special place in my heart. He was my first guest for the podcast when I started casting from the little casita in Cave Creek, Arizona. Unfortunately, our first version, which we did a few weeks ago, had terrible audio quality, completely my fault. I fixed the problems, and he was kind enough to join me one more time. So without further ado, I introduce to you my friend, Charles Specht. And Charles, I'm thrilled to have this conversation with you again, and that's a story for another time. How are you?
I'm doing great, Michael. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you today.
Okay. Well, we get a lot of listeners who are commercial lines brokers, and they're always looking for an extra edge. And what I'm excited about this conversation is that you have practical, tactical tips to give them. But before we give away all the goods in the store, tell us a little bit about Charles and what your story is, because I think it's fascinating.
All right. Well, I got into the insurance business around the year 2000 with a nice size regional brokerage firm in Central California, and cut my teeth doing contractors, kind of smaller construction companies, and did that for about a year and a half before I switched over to a very large Alphabet House national insurance broker. And it was from that standpoint that my eyes were opened a little bit on exactly how to do insurance, maybe a little bit more professionally.
And you built up a pretty decent book of business there, my friend.
Yeah, I was very fortunate. It was a hard market at the time, so selling was a little bit difficult. But built it up to close to about $1 million just at Gallagher itself in commission and revenue. So fairly successful.
And then your life took a change. You made a switch, and I have a feeling that that was something that required a little soul searching. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, it was definitely a very big life change for myself as well as my wife and five children. But I've been thinking about it for a number of years and made the decision to go into pastoral ministry. And so I exited the brokerage side of sales, took a bivocational senior pastor position at a church, and because the church itself couldn't financially support myself, my wife, and my five children, I started an insurance consulting practice where I no longer sold insurance, but I worked directly with insurance buyers and helped them in their risk management, loss control, helped them organize their insurance renewal process, work with their insurance agents, and so forth. And so I did that for a couple of years with my consulting practice. I'm still a bivocational pastor even today. And I switched my consulting practice where I still do work with insurance buyers directly, but 90 to 95% of what I do today is work directly with the insurance agents, helping them sell a little bit more strategically and wisely, gaining the permission of the insurance buyer rather than just offering quotes.
Well, you're generous, Charles, letting me dive into your brain and suck out all the good stuff. So I do appreciate that, but I really appreciate the tactical, practical approach that you have. I know that a lot of what we focus on in the podcast series are big trends, big pictures, the forces that are changing the industry, but clearly, from time to time, I like to put our feet on the ground and make real things happen in the real world. So your focus working with commercial lines brokers, there's a lot of sales training available in the world. There's a lot of sales training available in our industry. What do you think that you offer that's a different perspective than people can get, kind of almost anywhere?
Okay, well, that's a great question. I think that you know, when it comes down to sales, there's lots of sales training that deals with prospecting, you know, managing your productivity a little bit more strategically,
right.
Following up with prospects, things like that. What I really do, and I got this, you know, from working with Arthur J. Gallagher,
right.
But even more specifically at my first consulting practice where I was working with the insurance buyers, is that, you know, most insurance agents, they, when they contact an insurer and they get the opportunity to quote, they look at that as a win. And that's not a win. It's not even close to a win.
Permission.
In fact, that could.
Right. Permission to quote, yeah. Not a win.
Correct.
Okay.
Not a win. Not at all.
Sometimes it's yeah. a loss, right?
It's a huge loss. I mean, if you don't win it, it's going to take away a lot of your hours and hurt your relationship with your underwriters. It's not a win. And, you know, what I do then is I work with the insurance agents on helping them to understand that. And that's a big issue. That's a big mindset change. So I work with them to try and really get the permission of the insurance buyer to allow them the exclusivity to represent the markets that they want, including the incumbent carrier. So I work with them on figuring out their value, the services that they're going to provide to the insurance buyer, and all of this in a specific niche so that the insurance buyer sees that agent as the best choice going forward. So as to remove the relationship with the incumbent agent, and to make this agent now the current agent going forward to work on the quotes with the current carrier and all quotes going forward that they want.
All right, I want to.
And
I love ahead. This. Okay.
Sure.
So before you give it all away, let me ask one or two questions. So sure. Number one, if permission to quote is not a win in your vocabulary or in the way that you've structured this game of sales, what is a win?
A win is the broker record letter. Period.
Got it. All right.
Yeah.
So
and let me add this, that every single time that an insurance agent speaks to a prospect, whether it's on the phone or an email or an appointment, the goal is always the broker of record letter, period. I coach agents to not actually go through the quoting process. They save a lot of time, but just do not go forward until you get that signed broker of record letter. You can provide value, you know, you can show what you're going to do, but don't actually go through the quoting process until you have that.
All right. So the obvious objection here, or the mm-hmm. obvious question, Charles, is, gosh, that sounds great, but how am I going to get that? You know, if I'm walking in cold and the guy has a 5 or 6 year relationship with the incumbent, how do I get that? So, but before you jump on that answer, mm-hmm. I want to circle back to something that might set the answer up, maybe, which sure. is your reference to being, I remember it as being the obvious choice or the mm-hmm. obvious expert. Talk to us a little bit about the stuff that an insurance broker does before they mm-hmm. knock on the door or make the phone call or, you know, even make contact. What does an agent do to establish themselves in a marketplace in such a way that they are the obvious choice?
Okay, great. That's exactly where it does start. So if an insurance agent, a man or woman, contacts a prospect and, you know, sits down with them and they come across as the jack-of-all-trades insurance agent, you're never going to get the broker record letter. So the more that you can specialize in the insurance buyer's industry, the more likely that you are going to be seen as the likely choice. So if you are contacting in a restaurant, okay, so if you're going to contact a restaurant owners, they really need to see you as somebody who's not just, you know, dabbling in restaurant insurance, but somebody who's actually in the restaurant industry. And that's the issue. You don't want to come across as a vendor of insurance. You want to come across as somebody who's in the restaurant industry where insurance, loss control, risk management, safety for restaurants in the insurance side of it is what your focus is. And so if you can provide, you know, value and you can show the expertise to a prospect in the restaurant industry that you are somebody who only does restaurants and everything that you do is focused around restaurants, then when it comes down to the decision on which insurance broker they're going to choose, that's when you are the likely choice going forward, rather than you know, any agent just contacting them.
Okay, so you threw out a few behaviors. So talk to us a little bit about breadth of knowledge. So I got the impression from what you said that the broker can't just be the guy who, quote unquote, sells insurance to restaurants, but they also have to know insurance. And I think you mentioned risk management and added value. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. talk to us a little bit about that breadth that takes a broker beyond being just the guy who sells the policy or knows how to structure the coverage.
Mm-hmm. So it little goes back to a little bit of even branding. You know, every LinkedIn post that you do, every tweet, every marketing, you know, brochure that you put out has to always go back to this particular branding aspect of being in the restaurant industry. So when you talk about risk management and loss control, you know, certainly your more green insurance producers aren't going to have that background. They're not going to know what to do. And even some more of the seasoned ones, they really don't understand risk management. So that doesn't mean that you necessarily have to do it yourself. You probably have somebody at your agency who does that, and so you need to then sculpt risk management and loss control services specifically for restaurant industry. If you don't have anybody at your agency who actually does that, what you can do is you can simply create a relationship with somebody outside of your agency at another firm that provides these services and work with them on sculpting some kind of a suite of products that they would provide to restaurant owners. And the agent can either simply just refer their prospect to this company to provide those services, or once they actually take over the policies, then they can provide those services themselves, just pay for the services themselves, depending upon the size of the risk itself. But there's lots of different ways to do it, but you have to really sculpt every single part of your daily business to that specific industry. So let me give you an example. I know some agents who, you know, 100% of what this agent does is ladies' garments. He does ladies' garments. You know, shirts, pants, things like that.
Right.
All manufacturing. That's all that he does. His clients see him from that standpoint. So he knows which CPAs out there are the best ones for the ladies' garment industry. He knows different aspects about the industry, and so he has found service providers for each aspect of that industry that whenever he talks to his clients or prospects, he can always refer them to that certain service provider who specializes in it. It just makes him look better. It helps his clients, but it also keeps in their mind that this agent, who is an insurance agent, is a solution provider for my industry. They become indispensable. They're not going to leave, you know, for another agent just because of a 5 to 10% discount on their insurance premium.
Got it. All right. So clearly, as I'm hearing you, Charles, one thing that an agent or broker wants to do is identify skills and that would be valuable to that part of the marketplace. And those skills don't necessarily all need to be mastered by the broker. So some of them, it's almost like presenting an entire team to some extent. So the customer might choose to use some of your references, might choose not to use some of your references because they have a CPA, but clearly they know, you know my space,
mm-hmm.
right? Okay, so now you mentioned one thing that kind of creates big picture above and beyond this. It's what my marketers would probably call top of the funnel activity, where you are, for example, you're writing. So maybe it's a blog, as you mentioned, or an mm-hmm. article in a trade magazine or something like that. In your model, how important is that kind of positioning?
Well, I think it's one of the most important things that an agent can do, because if you're going to contact a prospect, it's likely that the prospect might even do a little bit of research on you. They might just put your name in Google and see what comes
okay.
up.
It's very likely, okay? Right? Okay.
Yeah, very likely. Right.
In fact, there's about an 86% likelihood that they're going to check you out online. Okay, got it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and if you come up in the first couple of pages of Google as not just your LinkedIn profile or your Facebook, but you actually come up with an article or two specifically to their industry. That's going to be night and day versus any other agent who contacts them and asks to offer a quote. I mean, they're going to see you as something much more special. If also, you know, those blog posts can be on your own home base, you know, an agency website, a right. blog, you know, a personal website that's specifically detailed for your niche, but somewhere where you can actually bring them back with the hopes that, you know, to ultimately even gain their email address in exchange for some kind of value that you can provide to them, whether it's a PDF or, you know, some kind of system that they can utilize to maybe help them increase their revenues or decrease their sales. But every single thing that you put out on, you know, if it's not just going to be personal to your family, but anything that has to do with your career and insurance should always be tied back to your personal brand in your niche, if at all possible.
Got it. All right. So, Charles, if you don't mind me asking, you, as I recall, you had not only a niche in construction, but something of a micro niche. Yes?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and micro niche is the best way, at least that I come up with, to describe it. So construction is an industry.
Right.
You know, there's so many different things in construction.
And so it's
when an agent says they... when they say they specialize in construction, that's meaningless. Even if somebody said they specialize in roofers, I mean, there's so many different aspects to roofers.
Okay.
But, you know, when I did construction, I did steel erection contractors, specifically residential, that were doing, you know, multi-unit, three stories or above.
Got it.
So that was my focus. And everything that I did and detailed to the prospect had that kind of business owner or avatar in mind. So I worked with associations that specifically dealt with that. I worked with the manufacturers of the supplies to the specific, you know, prospect of mine, so that I would be the likely person that they would reference me in to their individual clients themselves. So everything that I did was geared towards that specific niche.
So what advice would you give brokers who like what you're saying and are trying to figure out what's my niche? So what kind of criteria should we be considering when we consider niche selection?
Yeah. One of the main things that I do with each of my coaching clients at the very get-go is this. We really focus down on what we're going to work on going forward. And so, you know, I have them make a list of the things that they're interested in, you know, because it's always nice to work on things you're interested in. So whether it's boat manufacturing or tennis clubs or, you know, daycare centers, you just start making a list of things that you're interested in. Then you have to figure out what's going to be your prospecting geographic area. How far are you willing to travel? And then you have to figure out the size of the risk that you want to go after in regards to premium and break that down into commission. An agent, by the way, should always be concerned about commission, never premium. You can't spend premium, forget about premium, right. Figure out how much commission you're going to bring in on that specific risk. And then once you decide the size of the account, are there enough of that particular account in the geographic area in which you're willing to prospect? Then you look at your competition in regards to other agencies. Are there other agencies out there who specifically specialize in that? And if there are, can you compete against them?
Mm-hmm.
They have a specific program that you don't have access to. Is there another insurance carrier out there that is writing that class of business? And can you get appointed with them? So when you start going down the list on each of these things that you're interested in, you will inevitably just start crossing some of them out because they don't make sense. And the goal is to come up with at least two, maybe three niches that after you go through this process of, you know, figuring out what will work and what won't work, I typically try to break it down to at least two. And then I'll have the agent focus half the day on one niche and the second half of the day on the other niche, and then switch it up every single day. So that half the day you're going to prospect and market yourself on this particular niche, and the other half of the day you're going to contact the other niche. And one of the first things I have them do is I have them make 100 calls to the business owners in this niche.
Right.
It has nothing to do with insurance. You simply contact them and let them know that you're thinking about getting into their industry. So let's say we've got, you know, daycare centers,
right,
and roofing contractors. So you're going to contact daycare centers thinking, I'm thinking about getting into the daycare industry, specifically maybe in the insurance industry and how I can help daycare centers. But I'm really trying to figure out what are the three main problems that daycare centers deal with every single day. So when you contact 100 or so daycare centers and you eventually get answers, you're going to find out that they deal with the similar problems, 3 to 5 different problems every single day. Employees, it might be health insurance. It might be finding the right employees or how to train them, maybe getting the lower cost on supplies, whatever it is. You know, restaurants have different issues like social media.
Okay.
How to help with website. They don't know what to do with this.
Let me point something out here to pointing out the obvious to the audience here. So far, the 3 to 5 problems that you've mentioned are not insurance problems.
And that should be the goal.
Okay.
They're usually not going to be the goal. Insurance is not going to be the big issue. And that's what you want. You want to find out the biggest issues in their industry. Because when you can come and provide solutions to the problems in their industry, they're going to want to talk to you. When you can put together a guide that provides the solutions to their biggest problems in their industry, they're going to want that guide. They'll give you their email address to get that guide. It's going to have your name on it. Every time they see it, it's going to be you in their eyeballs showing the greatest value to their specific industry.
All right.
And so then when it comes to the ask for insurance, you're the obvious choice.
Okay. So let's walk this one through. I'm the restaurant guy, okay? And you've heard it from me, and then apparently maybe you heard it from 63 out of the 100 people that we talked to. Everybody says we need to do something with social media. I don't know what to do. I don't have time, blah, blah, blah. So you're the broker. What do you do with that?
Well, specifically, if you're like a millennial or somebody who is very much active in regards to social media yourself,
right.
Trust me, the average restaurant owner probably is not.
Right.
You can actually provide some kind of solution to them, even internally. You can do it at your own agency where you provide the social media posts that link back to maybe their website or whatever it is, and you can actually take over that. And I would say always do it in one of two ways. You either fee it for the service or you do it in exchange for the broker of record letter on their insurance policies, one of those two ways. If you don't want to handle it internally, that's where then you, once you've done your homework, you go and you find the company that specializes in social media for restaurant,
right.
And you can make the introduction to them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So now at some point, I think you'd mentioned, you know, maybe a guide. So now is it possible the broker could have, 11 breakthrough tips for, restaurants, for social media, blah, blah, blah. Right. So boom.
That's exactly what you want to do.
Okay. So what do you do with that piece? Right. What would you do with that piece? How do you squeeze juice out of that fruit?
And what you want to do is you want to create a guide for each of those 3 or 5 different problems that they have in their industry.
Got it.
So using your example of the one with regards to social media, you could create a guide that has the 11 things that a restaurant owner needs to do in regards to social media to drive more customers to their restaurant.
Right.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
And you can have it titled just like that. And it would provide the 11 different things that maybe you've done some research on, you've spoken to a social media company, whatever it is. If you find it on the internet, you can utilize it, but give the proper attribution in your guide itself.
Mm-hmm.
But that then would be something that you could put behind a wall that in exchange for their email address, they would then receive instant access to it. And then you can begin an email drip system to that restaurant owner that maybe the next 2 to 3 emails that you're going to send them have nothing to do with insurance, but they give more solutions to their biggest problem. And at the bottom of the email, it's always going to have your name and you're an insurance agent. And then once you come to the point of asking to meet with them to talk about the insurance, it's likely that they're going to be so much more positive in their response to you because they're seeing you as somebody who's actually helping them, not just somebody who's asking to offer a quote.
So you're correct. Let me see if I can sort of summarize a core principle of Charles Specht, okay? What you stand for, right? So, because I think it's music to my ears that the insurance agent should be an ongoing stream of value and that value can be delivered to the marketplace before anybody even hears about you, knows about you before you pick up a phone, and then obviously continues after they become a customer. Do I get a yes on that?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
All right. Okay. Good. All right. Well, music to my ears, because my next book on the new content marketing is almost done. So hopefully, within 2 or 3 weeks after people hear this, that will be available, and maybe we have some shortcuts on how to make that easy for people. So you're saying, to some extent, agents or brokers, they need to learn to become content providers. And that delivers an opportunity, that creates an opportunity for them to deliver ongoing value that establishes them as the obvious expert in their area. Mm-hmm. All right.
And when we talk about content, you know, it's content that brings a solution, that answers a problem in their industry.
Well said.
You know, the world has changed, and so is insurance, constantly changing, but it's changing very, very quickly. And what worked 10 years ago doesn't work today. And so we have to be in a different position. It used to be that, you know, they did insurance with the guy who was down the street. Now it's much more global. And so then the person who is in that specific industry providing the value is going to win more often.
All right. So now let's go back to the streets. Okay. So I'm the broker here. I've delivered really good content to my marketplace. I've delivered solutions to problems. Some of them have heard about me. Some of them haven't. Some of them have given me their email address in exchange for this really great stuff that I've created. Now I want to pick up the phone and I want to get that broker a record letter. All right. So I have a feeling that just because I published a report on social media, I don't quite yet have instant permission to, you know, demand their broker record letter. How do we get there?
Well, it's certainly more difficult over the phone. And so any cold call should always then, the goal of that is to get the appointment and get off the phone.
Okay. So, fair enough.
You know, it's always better to do it in person because, you know, what you're going to have, you're not just going to bring, for example, your agency brochure and your business card and leave that with them.
Right.
You're going to have something detailed, specific for that particular niche. And so I actually have a brochure that I give to my clients, but it is detailed, specific to, and they can, you know, create the images and the wording for their specific niche, but it actually gives a timeline of services of what you're going to do specifically on each and every date in the quoting process, you know, what you're going to do 90 days beforehand, which underwriters you're going to speak to, that you're going to show up with the quotes 14 days before the renewal and not the day before, that once you have the quotes and you go over them with the insured, you're going to decide which one they want to bind with, and then you're going to go back and negotiate the quote even further with that specific carrier. See, what happens is, you know, once an agent offers, you know, decides to offer a quote, gathers some information and leaves, they're gone for a month and a half, and the insured forgets about them. Most agents provide nothing in writing in regards to what they do. Lots of agents talk, but nobody puts it in writing. And so when you sit down with the prospect in their office, their place of business, and you're going through and saying, we're going to do this on this specific date, and this on this date, and this on this date, because you're going to be an ethical person and follow through on what you actually say, but also because it's in writing, they look at it as that you will follow through. And they're most likely their current agent. When they bound the policy, they haven't contacted them in the last 4 or 5 months for the most part. And so meeting with an insurance buyer 6 months after they renewed is the ideal time to speak with an insurance buyer about the services that they have or have not received and what you're specifically going to do for them going forward.
So how many months out are we? So in this scenario, typically, how many months out are we from their expiration date?
Yeah, I would say anywhere from 5 to 10 months before is a wonderful time to meet.
Okay.
So obviously, if you can do it, you know, within 90 days, that's fine too. But you are less likely to have resistance from the insured when you're in that time frame because they're not coming up for renewal, so they don't feel required to buy anything from you. But also, during that time period, the incumbent agent has not followed through on their promises. They have not actually provided the services they said they were going to do.
And you have a timeline.
Correct.
You have a process or a system, a sequential series of steps, right, that reliably and predictably produces results.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always felt that people respond really well to knowing that their provider has a system or a process. It seems to give people confidence.
It does. And, you're not just going to be winging it.
Okay. So, Mr. Expert, yes. I mean, I'm going to go in and have surgery or, you know, whatever it is, or I'm going to build a house. I want to know that my provider has a process that reliably and consistently delivers positive results. So I've established my expertise. Now I've come in and I've established it more. And I've done it in a fairly non-threatening way because now I'm out, but like you said, 5 to 10 months. There's not a lot of pressure, okay? And presumably, maybe, am I possibly bringing some, you know, some leave-behinds like, oh, you mentioned social media, here's a report, or you mentioned this, here's, a, you know, my guide on, you know, this, okay? So now, I still don't have the broker record letter. How do I get it?
You're gonna set up another meeting.
Okay.
You can send them another, you know, email post that provides them a little bit more value.
Right.
But, you know, at any given time, whenever you meet with them, you have to put a line in the sand and ask for the business. This is where most salespeople fail. You know, they place their quote down there, but they never actually ask for the business. And so when you show the client your timeline of services and what you're going to do, and they agree with you that that's what they want, then that's when you pull out the broker record letter and you put it on their desk and you say, sign this, and then you'll have everything starting right now.
Do you sometimes do that on the first appointment?
I always do it on the first
appointment. Okay.
So in that's order, the goal of every contact.
In order to proceed, I need to ask you to sign this.
Correct.
Right. Now, how much explanation or does the prospect need typically? Do they know what they're doing? How do you explain that broker of record letter to them?
Well, you can explain it from the standpoint that it doesn't change anything in regards to their coverages, their terms, or their pricing. It simply just allows you as a new agent to begin servicing their policy going forward, and that they would then be looked at as the agent with that carrier. And then once the renewal date comes up, then you will begin negotiating with that carrier and all of the other carriers. So you let them know that nothing changes in regards to their current policy. It simply allows you to service the account going forward. But it's also very important, and this is one of the things that I have to teach my clients as well, my coaching clients, is that, you know, they're going to get a phone call from the current agent, you know, who's now been fired, saying, I got this letter from my underwriter, what's going on?
Right.
And so you have to then coach the insured on what he or she is going to do and say when that time comes. And so many times, one of the things that I would say is you actually give the insured a letter, and it's a letter that they would then, you know, email or just mail it, however they want to do it, but send it over to the current agent that just explains that they've made a business decision to move on. Thank you very much, and they have chosen, you know, just to end communication at this point and not go any further. So it gives them instructions on how to deal with it because, you know, that agent, unfortunately, is going to call, you know, them and cry and promise everything that they're going to do going forward, and you don't want that to happen.
Right. I took you to the game last year, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So they're going to cry, right? somehow the image of insurance agents crying on the phone to me just totally breaks my heart. So it's uncomfortable. So other than the letter, okay, so the agent gets a letter, he's still going to call, right?
Mm-hmm.
Probably,
yeah.
Right? You're still going to call and cry. How do you prepare them to deal with that in kind of an emotional or human way?
Well, normally, and this is how I typically did it when I was selling. You know, you want to be as clear and upfront as possible and explain to the insurance buyer exactly what their signature does. And so you just tell them point blank, are you willing to fire your current agent and hire me right now? And if they're not willing to do that, then they don't understand what that letter is going to do.
Okay, now
because
if
that's
they,
precisely what
right. So if they say no, that doesn't necessarily mean you stop, right? So they say, no,
correct.
I'm not comfortable with that. What? How do you respond to that one?
Yep, and then it's really just a matter of going back and reemphasizing what it is that you're going to provide and what the other agent has not done at this point. you know, every conversation is just giving more power, more credence to what it actually is that you're providing from the value statement.
Let me ask you another question. Well, about this value statement. So, I understand that there's a very clear process that goes from now to the point of renewal. So we have this process of shopping and marketing and, identifying risk and creating the ideal package, et cetera, et cetera. Do you also present a timeline of what happens after you become my customer?
So, yes, the timeline of service that you provide to them offers a 12-month picture. So it's everything that you do from month to month.
All right. So what kinds of things? I mean, obviously, this is going to vary depending on the size of the account. Mm-hmm. But what are some of those things that happen during the course of the year? Because I'm thinking I want $1 million book of business like Charles, and I'm not going to go visit everybody 12 times a year. So what kinds of things? How do you deliver that ongoing stream of value? You know, and again, of course, I'm obviously, as the host of this podcast, a fan of technology that allows you to scale. So that's probably part of it. But what do you do during the course of that year to not only make it look like, gosh, the guy was really cool, you know, before I became his customer, but where did he go now? How do you stay present in their lives?
Well, when you have the timeline of services that you're going to provide, that's going to be based upon your best case prospect, okay?
Right.
But when you sit down with them, as you go through some of the things that they want, you know, it might not actually square with what your timeline of services is. So you're going to sculpt the timeline of services for that specific prospect based upon your conversations with them. So normally I would provide nothing less than quarterly loss control and claims loss summaries and visits with them. But many business owners might just not have time for that. And so they might only want one every 6 months. And so then you're just going to detail it for that. But depending upon what industry it is, like restaurants, then you can explain to them that maybe the timeline of services, the big thing that they want is a website, social media, help with their Yelp reviews, whatever it is. And so then you create the timeline of services for other people on the staff. That's why the agency keeps a large percentage, right?
Right.
They need to provide services as well.
Okay.
So the agency is going to provide many of these services as well as the relationships that you introduce them to. And so it just provides the timeline of services that we're going to do this, and then we're going to do this, and then we're going to do this.
So I suspect that maybe you just answered the question that I was forming in my mind when you said the other relationships that you're going to introduce them to, because there may be the commercial broker listening to this conversation saying, I'm not going to get that kind of support from my agency, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
So sometimes they are relationships that get introduced.
Correct. And okay. I would say that more than half the time, that's going to be the case.
Got it. All right. Very good. Okay. So I suspect that in spite of all of our best efforts so far, that our closing ratio is not 100%.
No, it's usually going to take about 7 different touches for this to actually work out.
Uh-huh.
So let me give you a little bit of a statistics on what I found to be true. Typically, 15 to 20% of the insurance buyers out there are very happy right now with their current agent. So they might have, like, their brother-in-law as the agent, or the agent, him or herself, is just doing a good job. So that agent has the permission of that client.
Or maybe I'm not happy, but he's still my brother-in-law. Okay.
That's right. So, you're just never going to get it.
Not
going to
get it.
Once,
okay.
You just have to move on, right?
Yeah, right.
I'd say there's about another 15 to 20% who right now are very unhappy with their agent. And once you find those, once you start doing your prospecting, you're going to find that they're just not happy. Many times, that's when you get the BOR on day one. So you're going to find that when it comes to those, you're probably going to get the signed BOR on the first, second, or third contact, because they're just not happy. They're willing to make a switch, and then by even not changing anything in the policy, just changing the servicing, they're willing to do that right away.
Got it. All right.
So 15 to 20% of them just right now are not very happy. The other remaining amount, which is the bulk of them, right, 70, 75% of insurance buyers out there, are neither happy nor unhappy. They're neither loyal nor disloyal. They're neither satisfied nor dissatisfied. They're just along with the status quo. They just have an agent right now, and that's just the agent that they're with. No particular reason. They're not, you know, overly excited with the amount of service that they're getting, but they're not actually completely dissatisfied either. And so then that's really where you need the more touches. That's really where you provide the value to their specific industry over the course of many touches, which might be, you know, LinkedIn messages. It's going to be emails. Mm-hmm. It's going to be PDFs.
Right.
You might put on some kind of a promotion where you invite 25 different restaurant owners, and they're going to have somebody come who you're going to cater lunch, and they're going to have somebody who speaks to them specifically for 1 hour about how to do social media for the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just something like that where you have specific touches, but over the course of time, you know, you will get a number of those. But if an agent did nothing more than just prospect, just trying to find the 15 to 20% who are not at all happy, you could write a lot of business by just providing the services and requiring the broker record letter up front.
Got it. All right. Charles, I have a page of notes. So before we wind it up, and in a moment, I'm going to ask how people can reach out to you and learn more about you. But is there anything else that's in this process that we haven't covered?
There's a lot of different things.
Okay.
You know,
all right.
I actually have a full curriculum at my website, permissiongroup.com. But I actually have a full curriculum that we go through in regards to thinking bigger. Maybe I could say one thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
I personally believe that it is even quasi-unethical for insurance agents to go through the quoting process.
Okay, all right. So you know, fair enough. So now you're making it a sin. so just quoting, like going through the normal quoting process, you say it's not just not such a good idea, you're saying it's unethical. So explain that one.
Well, you know, it actually hurts the insurance buyer's ability to get better competitive quotes. And so when you start to add insurance agents in the quoting process, it's likely that agent is going to put together their submission and just send it out to the marketplace. And the insurance carriers are going to receive multiple submissions from different agents on the account. And what that does is it hinders the underwriter's desire to actually want to work on the account, because the incumbent agent is going to retain the business anywhere from 90 to 92% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you are a quoting agent who's just coming in here and blanketing the marketplace, you know, the underwriter knows that it's very unlikely for him or her to actually get that business if you're not the incumbent. And so if you submit it and you block that market, it actually hinders the insurance buyer's ability to get a very good quote, a competitive quote from that insurance carrier going forward. Because the underwriter has to, you know, make his or her numbers every month as well. And so they have to work on the accounts that they think they can get.
Got it.
And so the only reason why the quoting process is like it is, unfortunately, is because we as insurance agents have set it up that way. But it's not in the insured's best interest. The insured's best interest is to trust one agent and let that agent get the quotes on their behalf. They are going to get a much, much better result going forward.
Fair enough. No, that's a good sound argument. So I like that. All righty. So, Charles, I want to give you the opportunity to say something to the insurance brokers of the world in like 15 words or less. What's the message that you want to deliver to them? What do you want them to pay attention to? Get under their skin. What do you want to say to them?
Oh, I suppose I would say stop offering renewal quotes and don't do anything until you get the broker record letter.
Bingo. All
Period.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
That's the big switch.
All right.
That's the big switch.
That's big. All right. So, Charles, I suspect people will, if they're on the commercial side, they want to find out more about what you do, how you deliver your service, how can they learn more, and how can they either make contact with you or contact with your firm.
And I also want to just say one thing. You know, although my focus tends to be commercial,
yeah,
I work with employee benefits people all the time. And actually, the same thing works with personal lines insurance, because the same people who make decisions in commercial lines, it's people who do the same thing in personal lines. So it can work with any side of the insurance. My specialty just happens to be with commercial agents.
Very good. Okay. So,
but the name of my company, you can find me at permissiongroup.com. Mm-hmm. And that's actually the name of my organization. But I also have a guide that I put together for insurance agents. And if you want to put your email address in, it'll actually get sent to you automatically. But you can go to www.millionaireinsuranceproducer.com. Millionaireinsuranceproducer.com. Just put in your email address. I'll send you a guy that has 7 steps to building a $1 million book of business.
Just sounds like here's a guy who eats his own dog food, right?
It works.
All right. Okay, it works. All right. Charles, this has been fun. I'm glad we had the opportunity to do this. Thank you so much for your generosity and sharing.
Michael, thanks so much. I'm an avid listener of your podcast. You're doing a great thing. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Connected Insurance Podcast. If you found this episode informative, please share it with your peers and colleagues. Explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers by visiting agencyrevolution.com and clicking media. Subscribe and get updates delivered right to your inbox. New episodes every Wednesday.